Also den Intro für unser nächster Speaker wird kurz und knackig gehalten. Hier ist der Simon Weckert.
So, our next speaker is Simon Weckert. He's a media artist and he will give us a small presentation. And please welcome Simon.
Ja, hi.
Hi. Cool, dass ihr da seid. Nice to have you here. Last day. I hope you had a good conference. If you're not tired, you did something wrong. And I will be talking about algorithms in war, but also the bridge to art. The title of my presentation is Zapfenstreich, which is a tradition in the German military where leaving members are given a musical farewell. So after my studies, I went into art, which I found more interesting, and I use digital media in my art. And even what is happening here on Congress in terms of art objects, to get that into metaphors, we're working with different media, different forms of presentation and expression. And it's all about technologies. Maybe you know this work of mine, Google Maps Hacks. So I don't need to explain it further. That's cool because that gives me more time. So yeah, we have problems with the internet to begin with. Awesome. Let's see. In this work, this work is about the so-called Zapfenstreich, which I just explained, where I built a trumpet that plays the Zapfenstreich melody. This melody is used or was used to call back soldiers from the battlefield to symbolize drawback. And this alludes to a third revolution in weapon technologies, which is autonomous weapons. What we see is the self-playing trumpet. I used a recurrent neural network and told the system, please try and learn this melody yourself. And what I'm saying is, well, the machine is calling back the machines from the battlefield. And that poses two questions. One is, in how far can we take over decisions and give them to emotionless machines? Or aren't humans an important factor in this circle? And the second question is, in how far a development in companies such as Google concretely can support this? They might develop algorithms used in those systems. In 2017, a contract was made with the Pentagon, the so-called Project 11, which is a drone algorithm that is used to find and attack armies. And there was a large resistance among the employees of Google itself, and Google had to dissolve the contract with the Pentagon. What I did was I took my trumpet and went to the Google headquarters in Zurich and did a flyer action and made the trumpet play in order to tell people about this. So this is what I tried to do with my art. I tried to draw attention to the fact. And what happened was that the headquarters was closed down for half an hour, so no one could leave the building. So, shortly on the aspect of what is art for me, what does it represent for me, what do I try to express? What we've often heard on Congress is we know a lot of things, we've heard a lot of things, but it always depends on how many layers we wrap this in and how many metaphors we find. Because you have to wrap it carefully so that people will take the message. And trying to find different approaches and metaphors, in this case, to criticize algorithms and autonomous weapon systems and reach people that we wouldn't reach with the traditional media. On the other hand, I also want to give a testimonial to the generation that comes after us on the time we're living in. Art is a way of coping with reality and depicting realities and to broaden the horizon and to build an additional realm with more fantasy. That was a quote from Alexander Röhm, and I can only underline that. But in this realm, it's not about only about art, but also about autonomous weapons and art. So now it's going to be a bit technical. I hope I won't lose you. We'll come back to the artist perspective, but it may sound rational. But first of all, many of you might think of things like Terminator. This is fiction. This is not what it's about here. Now, the judicial and discussions, since the ban on landmines in 2014, it's been relatively quiet. And with upcoming autonomous weapon systems in 2014, blinding lasers was 1998, and in 2014 we started discussing what are autonomous weapon systems. The current development of autonomous weapon systems is unstoppable. It's just about finding a way to ban them. Some states don't really want to understand what autonomous weapon systems are and what they do. For example, Russia is saying autonomy doesn't exist or can't exist in these systems, but at the same time they're developing such systems. The US wants to see if there's advantages. Israel and so on are the states that are where the most companies are located that develop these weapons. And of course, this also has ties with the weapons lobby in Germany. Germany, since 2022, has the G7 presidency. And is making advances. And usually, it's one country that goes ahead and takes some advances, and all hopes at the moment are on Austria to find a way to get a ban on these systems. But so far, there haven't been great developments in these conferences because it always has to be unanimous. And for 8 years, we've been discussing autonomous systems. And this is a current definition, those three conditions. Human in the loop, so the human has to give the command. Human on the loop. Humans can always stop the action and stop the robot. In systems such as the Iron Dome by Israel, for example, humans can cancel the process, but they would be too slow to give the order. And then there's human out the loop, that's weapons that can find their target without human interventions. So that's basically totally autonomous.
I'm going to show you a couple of systems that exist. First one, okay, drones, whatever. You know them through the drone warfare in Ukraine, but there are much autonomy in those systems. On the left, we see a drone, it's called a loitering drone. It started and it loiters over the battlefield and can choose its own target autonomously, and it's just fed with the visual data and can decide by themselves. And this system is used in Ukraine right now. On the right side, we see an autonomous tank that's developed by Russia. It's pretty self-explanatory. It's developed by Russia and all Russian technology. So there are other systems as well, and other kinds of autonomy in technology. For example, a pretty simple thing is disinformation, like bots spreading fake news and misinformation through social networks and spread it. And as those systems are sometimes autonomous, this technology is basically in the same category. But there are other things as well, like these systems, which on the top left, it's called a guided trigger. It's a system to add autonomy to a weapon. The scope is linked with the trigger of the gun when the target is in the crosshairs. So the scope can factor in all kinds of sensor data like wind speed, and the soldier only has to pull the trigger, and it's clear that this will increase lethality on the battlefield. And I'd argue that surveillance systems will add to this as well. On the right side, it's called autonomous watchtower. It's on the border of the of North and South Korea, and it communicates with the border guards to detain people who are on the demilitarized zone. Another possibility are so-called expert systems. They're very specialized, and I'm going to get a little bit more technical now. So on modern battlefields, all kinds of information is available, and it's like this huge influx of information. And the thought process is, what if we build a system that factors in old conflicts, satellite data, and just build an algorithm that can tell us how to proceed and do like predicted policing, but on the battlefield. And this software is by the software company Palantir, which was mentioned a couple of days ago. And they developed this software called AIP, and it's like ChatGPT for war. And they have a large language model that is fed with the knowledge of past conflicts, and you can chat with the system and get data or get commands that should be sent, and you can command people or drones with the software, and you can see very clearly that there's a huge lot of problems that come with this. If all the information is getting larger and larger, so those systems get more important by the day, and so humans won't be able to decide based on this large information. So those systems will be very central and can't go away anymore. And of course, this will trigger like a race between countries. So if one country has the system and all the other countries have to go the same way. And so these will be very important in future wars. The software company Palantir says, well, a human is always in the loop and has to give the final command. But we know through psychology that people like to blindly trust technology, and if there's a thing called technology bias, where people are tend to trust computers blindly. And they trust the data of computers blindly without checking if they're true or not. So, like in this example, you trust your GPS and even go off a bridge because the navigation system told you to do so. So let's go to the critics on autonomous weapon systems. There's a few of them here. We go into them in different layers. There's the responsibility gap. So if the gun manufacturer builds the weapon to his to the best of his abilities, and we put everything in it we know, and you can trust this weapon, then it's going to be hard to check if there's war crimes. Who's at fault? Is it the programmer? Is it the commander? Is it the gun company? So we don't know who's responsible. We see this with like drone attacks. If a soldier commands a drone and kills like civilians, he can be prosecuted for that because he's responsible for the action. So every weapon that's been produced, it's in control of the country that built it. So and there's no standard how to use those weapons and how to use them, so it's we don't know if it's war crimes or not. So the it also lowers the level on when to use force, because classically you have to put people on the line, and if you only have robots, you're very prone to send to use them, and you'll just use the machines because you've got nothing to lose. It's not too bad when you lose the machine, so it really much lowers the limit on when to use force. Thirdly, the human as a moral check on the battlefield. So there's a huge gap between the psychology and the feelings of a person with the battlefield. So there's no emotional no connection. Humans can do that, and they can show mercy, but and this is a factor to not kill people. We know soldiers are trained to blindly follow orders, and it's got to do with PTSD. But it shows that soldiers are autonomous systems are a very good way to enforce those kinds of commands. And fourthly, it's autocracies. Like dictators can use these autonomous weapons against their own people. So Even the most emotional soldier will hesitate to shoot his own people, but autonomous weapon systems don't have any connection to the people, so they're the perfect weapon to use against their own people.
The quote on the slide is, art trains perception. A war situation is a world of algorithms. Art is the lawyer against the algorithms. Okay, so I'll turn this thing off again. Yeah, enough said, right? I showed what you can do, what weapon systems are, what the challenges and the criticism is. Couldn't I just end this talk here? If there wasn't some interesting things that happened in the past 1 or 2 years that make this that paint this art in a very strange light. But let's start with the beginning. We know that Russia invaded Ukraine in February 2022, and Olaf Scholz, the German chancellor, said that the German army will get 100 billion euro. And a month later, this open letter by Palantir was published, where they basically say that Europe now has to equip itself with the algorithms and autonomous weapons so that Europe can remain strong enough to defend itself against invasion. So the subtext is, we have the software, we can help you. So this open letter was signed by Alexander Karp, which is one of the CEOs of Palantir. You can see him on the right here. So a few words on Palantir. Palantir delivers technologies and software that is used for expulsion, and it is criticized that it is, it contributed to the Trump administration's efforts to expulse migrants. And one of the other CEOs of Palantir is the right hand of Donald Trump. His name is Peter Thiel. He's one of the co-founders of this company in 2003, and I think the idea even started from within PayPal, and he supported the Donald Trump election campaign strongly, and he also has this problematic ideology that technology is value neutral, first of all, and he denies the human responsibility for technology. So he's basically saying, just invent and publish everything that's there, and anything else comes second. So you see that we have those players on the playing field. Of course, Europe has different data protection regulations than the US, so how can we enter this market? Half a year later, 1 year later, this book by Alexander Karp was published. The title is from artificial to augmented intelligence. And the subtitle is what we can learn from art to define the software of the future. And in this book, it's an interview format, they write that art is free. Art can break up existing structures, can promote innovation, propel creativity. So it should be as free as possible and it can't be regulated. At the same time, they draw parallels to software and make the same postulations for software, the same demands. So this text is basically saying that software and art are means to propel innovation, and that software shouldn't be limited and should be viewed as value neutral. I think I gave you some examples that it's not that easy. And maybe there are controversial opinions in this room. When it comes to surveillance software, for example, there are clear limits. Just because it's doable doesn't mean that you have to do it. So this isn't, well, a large banger. Or this wouldn't be a large banger if at the end of this year in Leipzig there would have been these posters. All of Leipzig was spammed with these posters. There was the exhibition called Dimensions, titled Where Was Digital Art Before It Was Everywhere? You might have seen it. It was supported by Palantir and German Telekom. That is weird that surveillance software manufacturers are supporting art exhibitions. That I haven't seen that before. And I'm not sure, have you noticed? I think it kind of got drowned in everything else, but here in art it's a new quality. So that was in April this year in Leipzig. In the panel discussion, let's see who was there. There was Dunja Hayadi, Ulf Langenheinrich as an artist, co-curator Judan, who earnestly said in the panel discussion that there's no AI artists in Germany, so they had to invite so many people from abroad. We have Sigmar Gabriel, CEO of the Atlantic Bridge, Tim Hütgens, CEO of the German Telekom, and last but not least, Alexander Karp. That is weird. Is it about art or is this some kind of G7 summit? So in this talk, it was all about, well, we have to invest in technology, throw everything in. So the title of the presentation could have also been Digitalization First, Second Thought Second. So Palantir makes software that is used to identify, surveil, and spy on individuals. It basically combines existing data sets that were divided before. Surveillance and employees of Palantir were also involved in Cambridge Analytica, and that is used by the Hessian police, for example. So yeah. Here you can see the website of this exhibition, and it's relatively clear that this exhibition was all about promoting the company and put them in a positive light, and also they kind of appropriated art, the artist realm, to promote their business. So it was there were also local counter initiatives. There's collected signatures, and that was called Art Washing Leipzig. And on the exhibition itself, there was not a single work that was about discriminating applications, fake news, misinformation, and so on by AI. It was only about works that show the phenomenal, the beautiful of AI and algorithms. So, coming to the end, here you can see the artists involved that apparently didn't have a problem being part of this exhibition. So, does art have to be political? I would say art doesn't have to be anything. And in the best case, art should confuse. So, this breaking out of everyday life and thinking differently, thinking in ways that used to be banned. But of course, we know that art is often politicized and is shown in a political context. And if you're not political, this is kind of a luxury, at least at the moment. And we should also know that art is embedded in society. Artists are part of the society and co-define society. And we as artists, we have a responsibility in using technologies, and we need to involve the partners, and especially with upcoming AI technology. I think if you don't deal with these topics, surveillance software, etc., it's the minimum of that you should avoid such installations as the exhibition I mentioned. And with this, I conclude my talk. Thank you very much. Thank you so much, Simon. We are surveilled by the internet, and we surveil the internet on the Matrix channels, on Mastodon and IRC. We are taking questions. We have four hearing aids, aka mics, here in the room. And if you want to give us questions, you are welcome to approach the mics. And I can see that our surveillers on the internet have found a question. Would it be thinkable that machines could take better decisions than humans in war, and this could prevent bad things from happening? Yeah, of course. That's also the argument they're using. Less people die when you send out machines, but that also means that at some point machines will battle each other. And of course, better decisions can be taken. This is the main argument that is used, but we should know that humans are a strong moral instance and machines don't have that moral instance. Our AI-trained model shows that there's another question at Mike too. Thank you for your presentation. My question addresses the global level. Your approach, if I understood it correctly, is we need to see how we develop. We have to limit ourselves because there's the danger that if we go ahead too fast, bad things could happen. But at the same time, we see that China is developing extremely fast in this direction. We can't close our eyes towards that fact. How can we deal with the fact that on the one hand, development goes on and on, even against humanitarian international law, but at the same time, we have our moral obligations to keep with the international law and limit ourselves. Thanks. Did you want to say something? Okay. Well, of course that's a problem, because that's the narrative. If they do it, we have to do it as well. But that is exactly the loop that it goes on and on. And I think that a ban on landmines and blinding laser weapons is a good example on that there are possibilities to find bans and break the cycle. So, well, at first you have to raise the issue that when states use these technologies, it's just not okay. And it's a war crime, so that's the first step, the first threshold to define it. But yeah, that's a problem, but I can't solve myself because I'm not a military expert. But I have to say, some artists who participated in that exhibition did not have a bad conscience in working together with these companies that are using art washing to put beautiful artwork on their websites. And this is something we as artists can afford to say no, and I won't be part of that. I see another question at mic two. Yo! It sounds like a stupid question, but communication-wise, I find this very interesting, and I have to know. The Palantir letter from Alexander Karp, there was a black and white photo down on the right with of a fish with sunglasses. Is that his real signature that he uses in letters? No, he just used that. We used that for the panel. But he proclaims that he grew up with hippies. His mother was an artist. So he's using that as an argument to somehow present this company in a different light. This is really weird. So it's a good cop, bad cop game. But if you listen closely, you see those are strong patriots and they don't stand with what they're doing. I don't know, really bad people.
Okay. We have time for another question. So let's keep it short. Not a question, but an annotation. It's not about wars against us or China. It's about wars against African countries, against countries who can't defend themselves. And that's where you don't want to have moral checks by soldiers. It's not against us. It's not about wars against us. It's not a peer-on-peer conflict. It's that's just a candle in the wind.